this is Michelle Anderson, and I am here at Starbucks in Bangor with Matt Jacobson, who is going to be running for governor of the state of Maine. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm just great. So let me just start by asking you, why you?
Why me?
Why you?
That's a great question. A good way to start. I think you have to look at what's the problem in Maine. And I think clearly we spend too much, clearly we're taxed too much. But I think that's a symptom of a broader problem. I think the broader problem is a lack of opportunity in Maine. There's not enough people working, there's not enough jobs. And because of that, our government is stressed to the max. Now, certainly we're going to take some administration, we have to cut down the size of government. Certainly we're taxed too much. But we need to grow the pie. We need to create opportunity for a couple of reasons. One, you know, I look at my children, Maggie is 3 and Hank is 7. They're not going to have the same opportunity that my wife and I had, which is to live in Maine and raise our family, because there's not enough opportunity. Countless stories of people whose kids have left. They graduate high school, they graduate college, and they leave Maine for opportunity. We have a responsibility to do better than that. Our kids ought to have an opportunity. I have a lot of experience in bringing jobs to Maine. It's what I did when I ran the St. Lawrence Atlantic Railroad very successfully. It's what I do now at Maine and Companies. We recruit companies, we retain companies, and we incubate new companies to start. I know most about how to create jobs and how to get jobs to come to Maine. That's why Maine.
Well, now, I read a lot about you in coastal Maine and a lot about you in southern Maine, but I don't think I've read anything about you in northern Maine. I imagine you're aware that the problems in northern Maine are different than the problems on coastal Maine.
Sure.
Have you given any thought to why northern Mainers might want to elect you?
Oh, sure. And I think I reject your premise, if that's okay, on where I've been. I've spent most of my time growing up on the railroad. And after I got out of the Air Force and flying airplanes, I was a railroad guy. And spent about 5 years running the St. Lawrence and Atlantic Railroad out of Auburn. And so as you go out of Auburn and go towards western Maine, it starts to get very similar in terms of the issues. Densely populated, very rural, difficult economic development position. And then as I worked on the railroad, we did a lot of work with the Montreal Maine Atlantic, then the Bangor and Aroostook Railroad. I worked for the Canadian National Railroad and the Maritimes. So I've circled all around. I know that part of the world pretty well. At Maine & Company, we actually put businesses in Fort Kent and Presque Isle and Calais. We're working with Holton right now. We just put a business up in Burnham. So I think I have a pretty good feel for the challenges around northern Maine and rural Maine as opposed to the urban areas. In all my time bringing jobs, I've never brought a job to Portland or Bangor, any of the bigger cities. Most of our success has been in rural Maine. I understand how to make that happen.
Are you familiar with LURC at all?
Sure.
First, let me just tell you, up in northern Maine, a lot of our land is regulated by
sure.
LURC.
Sure.
There's a controversy now. There's people who want to go to a county form of government.
Yep.
There's people who want to abolish LURC. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do, and I think you have to take a step back of what are people really trying to accomplish. And I think it's a broader question. And I think it's we've used the regulatory environment not as a way to help companies get in compliance and help capture opportunity and make sure that they do it the right way, but to help them get into compliance, as opposed to using it as a way to beat people and keep development and keep jobs from coming. I think a perfect example of that is Poland Spring. All the science says they're doing it right. In the last 10 years, they've invested nearly $1 billion in Maine and hired 800 people. And for that, our regulators really attack them every time they try to make an expansion. I think that's a bad policy. I think our regulators ought to try to help companies get into compliance rather than as a tool to keep development from happening. So that's sort of the broad level that I approach the problem. LURC, it seems to me, there's a faction of people that want to use LURC and turn northern Maine into a national park and forbid any kind of opportunity. And I think this is one of those cases where local control is really important. The people in northern Maine ought to decide the development and the plans for northern Maine, not bureaucrats out of Augusta. One of the craziest things I've seen since, really in my whole time, was watching the Plum Creek hearings in Portland. Now, why do we have a Plum Creek hearing in Portland? Well, I mean, isn't Greenville adult enough to make their own decisions about how they want development to happen? Why is, I mean, are we going to have a state pier development meeting in Millinocket? I don't think so. I mean, so why don't we use a local control concept to let the folks in that part of the state plan their own growth, plan their own opportunity? And if they choose to have no opportunity, well, that's their choice. But we at least ought to give them the option, don't you think?
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
I don't think that's the concept. So you know, as we get into try to solve different questions, it seems to me, what's the basic philosophy? Well, my basic philosophy is, let's let the local folks decide what their town ought to look like, and then do what we can to help them meet that vision.
What do you think about land for Maine's future? Or do you?
Actually, I don't think about it that much. I mean, again, what's the broader philosophical? People who own land have property rights. It's what this country was founded on, and we ought to respect property rights. If we're going to buy the land from people and then do what you want with it once you own it, philosophically, I'm not opposed to that, as long as we're paying market value and people have an ability to buy and sell their land. I'm a big property rights guy, and I think we ought to respect that.
How about state rights?
In terms of what?
In terms of, well, federal encroachment. Lately, I've been reading a lot about Montana. Montana has declared that if a gun is manufactured in the state and it's sold in the state and it's used in the state, the federal government has no say in mm-hmm. what goes on. Mm-hmm. There are 6 or 7 different states right now that are...
Texas is certainly leading that
effort. Texas, I think Wyoming, yeah. Tennessee,
yeah.
They've all passed those laws.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, it seems to me, now I'm a native California would never, ever, ever do that.
Right.
So I'm just kind of trying to classify various states as to how, you know, how do the people feel about that? How do potential governors feel about that? Would you be willing to say to the federal government, no, this far and no further?
Depending upon the issue, certainly. But I think, you know, as a governor, your first responsibility is to the people of Maine. I think we are to a point in our state. More than 17,000 Mainers have lost their jobs since January 1st of this year. We are getting towards crisis point on just having jobs and opportunity in our state, just people being able to live. You know, some of these philosophical arguments are nice, and I'm certain, you know, the president had all these discussions when he was at Harvard. I'm worried about Maine people and how do we create opportunity in Maine. Where the federal government gets in the way of that, yeah, we'll have some significant conversations. But I'm not looking for that fight.
You know that we're stressed. We're running out of money. We've got a big budget hole coming up. What would you do to reduce that problem?
Yeah, I think you have two. I mean, let's understand the problem. Again, let's frame the debate. What's the problem? The problem is that this legislature and this governor, I think, I hate to call them irresponsible, but it's borderline. In 2 years' time, we have a $1 billion cliff we're falling off. They used about $600 million of federal stimulus, one-time money. For those of you that run businesses, we took capital money and put it in the operation. There's not a bank in the world that would finance that if this were a business. Okay? Plus, we have another $300 million probably of projections where we projected a certain amount of revenue and we're not going to get it, lower than what we projected, to about, my guess is $300, maybe $400 million. And then there are unfunded pension liabilities and some other issues. But it's more than a $1 billion cliff we're going to fall off in 2 years, which is roughly 20% of the state budget. Okay, so if people thought this budget discussion was difficult, well, stand by. It's going to get worse. So I think what we need now is a governor who has some administrative experience running large organizations. I ran the St. Lawrence and Atlantic Railroad. And I like to tell this story because I think it's pretty instructive on this point. We tripled the revenue. We added 23 new businesses. We were named North America's best short line railroad. We were featured in the Wall Street Journal. And I got an opportunity for a big promotion with a very big railroad, the Canadian National Illinois Central Railroad. By all account, we did very well. I was regulated by 3 states, a province, and 2 federal governments. I had 10 unions, 5 on the U.S. side and 5 on the Canadian side, all for 100 people and 300 miles of track. Okay, I have managed in a very heavily regulated, very unionized environment, very successfully. And it wasn't that I killed the union. It wasn't we broke the union. We worked with them. And that's the case here. as much as some people might like to see unions go away, they're not, guys. Okay? And the state union is there, and you're going to have somebody that knows how to deal with them. Okay? So that's first and foremost. Now, secondly, people say, oh my God, it's $1 billion. How do we fix that? My wife's an emergency room doctor. Okay? And I have two small children, and so I get to see kind of how the medical system works. My wife will tell you that there is a mandate now from DHHS that if you're pregnant and you're on Medicare, you must get a notice from your doctor in order to get prenatal benefits. Now, all of us think that people on Medicare ought to get prenatal care. I don't know if there's anybody that doesn't think we ought to take care of those women. But the point is that if you get an appointment with your regular doctor on Medicare, there's a $5 copay. If you go to the emergency room, it's free. So every night in every emergency room in Maine, we do pregnancy tests at between $400 and $600 per, depending upon what it costs in a particular emergency room. There's a huge opportunity when it's $5 at the CVS. $5 or $600, you tell me. Is there opportunity to save some money in DHHS? I think there is. But you need an administrator and somebody that can attract around him the very brightest people. I have a track record of doing that, attracting very smart staff. I would do that again as governor and bring in that under control.
That concludes the first part of our interview with Matt Jacobson. Join us again next week when Matt talks about taxation, spending, and school consolidation as it pertains to us north of Bangor.